97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Mark Cox in here along with my friend Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman.
Hi.
Oh, you called me your friend? That was the first time you've ever said that.
Aw,
I didn't realize it.
Co-host, yeah, but not friend. I mean, I do text
He's
crazy.
He's tearing up over
I know, Kumbaya. I am. I do send you goofy memes back and forth. We do that. So I guess that's friends.
Great show coming up for you today. We're going to talk about lots of different kinds of fishing. It seems like magnet fishing, electric fishing. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on out there.
There's stuff people don't even know.
I know.
Magnet fishing, to me, I saw the headline. I was like, okay, now that's something I can do.
That's something we need to talk about. Plus, we're going to talk about to the folks at the Missouri Department of Conservation because it's unusual to catch a sturgeon. Like, you can't really keep them. But they've been showing up in more and more unusual places, and if you hook one, you're going to know it. You're going to think you've hooked a log, apparently. So we're going to talk to Travis more about that if you love fishing. Looking forward to that.
I mean, would that be the biggest fish, freshwater fish, that you can catch? I know.
200
hold on.
Pounds?
Well,
a dolphin is a fish.
Okay, whatever. You know, maybe this is a call for the aquarium we need to make. But I know they've had monster catfish. We've talked to those guys that have, you know, caught those things. But
some big blue
100, 200-pound fish? Nobody expects that.
And before people start tweeting, I know a dolphin is a mammal, so it's not a fish.
Oh, thank
Sorry.
You.
I already knew that. I was just joking.
Tweets are already coming.
Yeah,
too
late. See it.
Damn
already,
Twitter.
My phone's lighting up right now. Carl, way to go. Nice. Hey, by the way, did want to mention, Bo, this situation in Buffalo. Well, I mean, the tragedy up there is just horrendous. That a criminal, mentally disturbed criminal, chose to go into a grocery store and target people because of their race.
Right.
We know what happened up there. Just horrible. 10 people lost their lives, been investigated, already being called a hate crime. But I'm watching the mainstream media cover this week, and I just want to run my head through the wall, particularly CBS. I'll just target CBS News because I happen to be watching them. And their initial reporting on this is, you know, obviously the kid was deranged. He drove 200 miles. He found this grocery store in a predominantly African-American community, and he started shooting. And did you know that the magazine he was using was illegal in the state of New York?
I did not.
That's what they chose to report during the reporting on this. The magazine he was using in this gun was illegal in the state of New York. Not focusing on the fact that murdering people is illegal everywhere, and the fact that the person doing it is criminally insane and should never have been allowed access to guns to begin with, because a year ago, he threatened to shoot up his high school, and authorities knew about it, and they took him in for a mental evaluation, and nothing happened.
Right. They had him on their radar before because of that. But I will tell you that the very first headline that I heard about it, and I usually stay pretty engaged, maybe a little less on the weekends, but the first headline that I heard about it, hate crime was used in that headline. I was like, well, boy, they got to that conclusion pretty dang quick.
Yeah.
And his social media, I guess, backed it up, but he's also disturbed.
Well, he is disturbed, and that's the point here. The media, the people that I commonly refer to as the race baiters in America, who want everything to be about an ist or a phobe or whatever it happens to be, race to this because they thought it fit their narrative. What happened here was horrible. The guy, I'll be the one to pull the handle when they electrocute him, which they probably don't do in New York anymore. He deserves to die for what he did. But the story here is the fact that a year ago, this kid made it known he wanted to shoot up a big event like a graduation. And they did nothing to him except take him for a mental evaluation where they apparently determined there wasn't enough evidence to prove that he was going to do anything wrong. And they let him go. I am a supporter of the Second Amendment. I think legal Gun owners should be able to go buy guns all they want. But when they do the criminal background check, mental health has got to play a role in it. We don't need more gun laws. We need to enforce the laws that are on the books, and we need to fix the mental health system so that if you ever threaten to shoot up a gymnasium full of people, you're never allowed to own a gun.
Right.
Period.
It means you have intent. It's that simple. It's in your heart. You've thought of that idea.
Thank you. Yeah.
And, you know, who knows? It could have been an experience that he had a video game or whatever. Maybe that gave him the idea. I'm not going there. I'm just saying that he obviously had the thought that he wanted to cause destruction.
And he expressed it.
Yes.
Why was he ever allowed to buy a gun? That's people want to focus on his hatred causes. Nobody murders people because they love somebody. I'm glad that they're focusing on the fact that this was a hate crime. But you got to go back and look a year ago and ask, why was he not processed into the system? And why was he ever allowed to get near a gun? He was an adult when he threatened to kill people at a graduation ceremony, and nothing was ever done to him.
Unbelievable.
It's sad because the president of the United States is now going to turn this into an excuse for more gun control when that's not the issue here.
And clip control as well, clip size control. It's crazy because it was a violent weekend, not only in St. Louis, but around the country, the church,
yes.
In California. It was hard. Every time I got a ding on my phone for a notification, I'm like, seriously, what is going on here? And people are about ready to lose their minds. Plus, we thought they were under stress during just a pandemic that everybody was worried about. Now you've got the inflation, the gas prices. People are losing it on a regular basis. So we really got to get a handle on it. But here's the thing. My cat drugging a killed a chipmunk, and I felt like the country is that dead chipmunk. It's like, what can the chipmunk do? And then, of course, then my cat starts batting it around and playing with it. I'm like, you know what? I kind of feel like that, personally.
The country is a chipmunk. I've never heard
that. A dead chipmunk, no less. Well, I came up with it this morning in my hot tub. I was in my hot tub, and I'm looking at it on the ground going, Orange, why'd you do that? Seriously.
I'm getting a visual. Bo Matthews in his hot tub.
Twice a day.
In the morning.
Highly recommended.
Wow, nice.
It's relaxing, isn't it?
Yes.
That's why his skin looks so supple.
It's my thought tub. Hey, by the way, somebody guessed me at 42 the other day. I wanted to hug him.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, now that he's your friend, you can invite him to your hot tub.
No way. No, my wife doesn't even. It's my hot tub.
I don't know if I'm going to accept that invitation.
I said I'm not inviting you. Get your own hot tub, brother.
Coming up, I'll bet Jared Coker has been in a few hot tubs. This guy has got an interesting life, to say the least. And now he's made news for magnet fishing.
Huh?
If you've never heard of that, we're going to talk to him about it coming up on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
Nobody's done a You Are the MAGA parody on that song.
They
How about
should,
that?
Why haven't they? Why haven't they thought of that?
Because Walter Egan probably won't let them.
You are the ultra MAGA.
Oh, you are the MAGA king anyway.
Yeah.
I think that's hilarious. This is Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. And our guest for this segment actually hit my radar when I saw a story of something I've never heard of in my life. Now, I've got to tell you, the kind of dork that I am, I'm preparing for retirement at some point in the near future.
Not, oh, really?
In the future.
Oh, okay.
Not near future, but in the future. And I was at a pawn shop, and I bought a metal detector because I had credit with the pawn shop, and I thought, you know what, maybe I'll use this. I tried it like twice. You got to dig a lot because these metal detectors go down. But I read this story about magnet fishing. Magnet fishing. Like, you go to a bridge. You have a strong magnet, and you put it over the edge, and you see what is down there. And so we want to welcome into the program somebody who was named in this article, Jared Coker, also known as @JaredRCoker on Twitter. Welcome to Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. I've been very busy lately with finishing up college and just kind of traveling all over between there and where I live. But I think now that I'm back home, I'll be able to relax a little bit.
And fielding all these interviews, or are we the first one?
As far as magnet fishing goes, you're the first one.
Well, I'm excited about it. Where did you first hear about magnet fishing?
So, randomly, one day, I was just kind of in bed watching a bunch of YouTube videos, and I started getting recommendations for, like, these other magnet videos, because some of them got a ton of views, because it was a fairly new concept then. So I watched one, and obviously, you know how YouTube works. You watch one video, suddenly your whole recommendation is flooded with that same kind of topic. So I just kept watching these videos, and I was like, man, that looks so fun. I want to pony up a few dollars and get me one of those magnets.
And 8 hours later, from watching those videos, you got into it.
Yep.
No, that's funny. So tell us the story. Kind of set this up for us with what you caught.
Like in any specific outing?
Yeah,
the best thing I've ever caught.
Tell me some interesting things you've caught and then lead up to the best thing,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, because the original thing was the safe. That was the first picture I saw, of course. We want to know what was in the safe, Geraldo Rivera, but go ahead.
Well, actually, the very first time I ever took it out to use it was actually a pretty memorable one. I took it, all right, so basically to set it up, I live about 30-ish, 45 minutes away from a really popular fishing lake. It's a really big lake. It's one that's got, like, at least in four different sections, there's roads running over spans of it. So I'm like, all right, that's like a heavy traffic area. We'll have, like, fishing people around. We'll have just people driving over. I want that to be the first spot I ever really try this thing. And mind you, since it's, you know, one of those kind of lake bridges with kind of like a state highway kind of road running over it.
Right.
I throw it out there, and the thing is like 30 feet deep. It was crazy. So I'm like, if I get anything on here, I'm going to have a heck of a pole just to drag it all the way up there.
You need a winch.
I know. I wish I had like a pulley system, but eventually, I think I find a couple smaller little trinkets at first, just kind of the normal, like, fishing lures and little scrap metal you'd find around there. And then finally, for the first time in my life, I feel it really connect onto something big. And with these magnets, you can tell whether you're snagged or whether you connect onto something, because you can actually feel it clamp down.
Okay.
And as I'm pulling this thing up, I'm like, man, I'm struggling. What is this? And obviously, due to the location, it being a big bridge over a span of lake where boats are running all the time, it was a big boat anchor.
Oh, no.
not like those giant, you know, cliche, classic shaped ones. It was just like a circular thing with a couple. It almost looked more like a propeller, but it was an anchor. And not sure why someone dropped it off there, because it was in perfectly good shape. I think I still have it.
Wow. We're talking to Jared Coker. He caught our attention because eventually you went magnet fishing. And tell us about the safe. Tell us how this happened, because, you know, I think of that as being something that would almost be too heavy to pull up.
Right. And why would anybody throw a safe over a bridge?
Yeah.
I know. So basically, this actually happened just a matter of weeks ago. I was still down in Missouri where I had been going to school. And mind you, I'd just come off a big stint where I hadn't actually magnet fished in roughly a year. I hadn't even posted a YouTube video in roughly a year just because of financial stuff. But since I had finally gotten a new magnet, because, you know, you can't get too attached to those things. You'll lose them every now and then, getting snagged or stuck on something. So I find this bridge out in the middle of nowhere with a decently deep-looking river running under it. And I'm just going to use this magnet for the first time, going to finally try to film another video. Starts off decent. I feel a couple connections. I think I pull up the big pair of pliers or something, a couple other pieces of metal. And finally, I connect onto something huge, and I can barely move this thing, and the current is so strong that every time I lift it up off the ground, it kind of pops off the magnet. So I'm playing around with this thing for a little while. I bring it up once enough to see it's a big box, but then it falls right back down. So about an hour goes by. I kind of stop fiddling with it because I'm like, there's no way this thing's ever going to come up. I may as well just go look for other stuff.
Right.
But then by chance, later on, I got back on it again, and I think even in the video, you can see I change up my plan. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to try to drag the whole thing up. I'm just going to try to get on it, keep it under the water, and just shimmy my way across the bridge till I'm over at the bank. And I'll set it down over there where I can just walk down and go get it myself. So that's what I did, and sure enough, I get there, and there's the unmistakable set of numbers and like a combination thing. I'm like, wow, I finally did it. It's an actual safe.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And this is something that's not too terribly uncommon. I've definitely heard of other people finding stuff like that, seen videos and whatnot. But this is the first time I'd ever found one. And obviously, there's no way to know 100% for sure, but the most logical explanation for an empty safe to be out in a river is that someone probably stole it, robbed someone, and then took what was in it and just dumped it out in the middle of nowhere so no one could find it.
So it was empty?
It was empty, unfortunately. Just a ton of water. That's why I couldn't bring it up.
So was the
facing upwards.
Was the door open?
The door wasn't open, but in the back, it looked like a flap had been cut out of it almost.
Gotcha.
Like that's how they got in or something.
Well, Jared, I would like to know, because I've never shopped for a magnet fishing magnet. Where do you get something like that?
There's actually a lot of magnet fishing based companies that have sprung up over the years. I know the past two magnets I've gotten are a really good deal from a site called Muscular Magnetics. It's like, all these companies do this. It's like bundle deals. Like you can get a decently mid-range magnet somewhere, kind of like the middle range of how strong they are, because they can vary. And these package deals will come with like the rope and some gloves and some thread lock to keep the little eye bolt, I think that's what it's called, in place, so that you know your magnet doesn't come right off the rope and carabiner.
Right. Have you found anything that, other than the boat anchor and an empty safe, have you found anything that was actually valuable? Because I'm thinking a magnet wouldn't work on gold, right?
No. Like somebody... There's only a select group of metals that are magnetic, like unfortunately tin and aluminum, they're not magnetic, but I guess that's a good thing, because then I'd just be dragging up old aluminum cans all day long.
Yeah, well, you know, aluminum these days.
Get a gun every once in a while, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
I have found two guns in my time.
Whoa! And what did you do with them?
Well, the second one I actually kept, I still have, and like, it's not a danger, so, you know, it's not like I feel any risk keeping it around. It doesn't work. It's too rusty. It was down there too long. But the first one, I actually called in the police for, because it was like I'm not too familiar with like guns and gun brands, but it was like a 4-foot-long like Remington rifle.
Wow. Okay.
I found that off in some country bridge that used to be a road, but kind of got switched up to be like a walking trail, but it runs over a span of lake. Had a lot of luck there. I actually found both guns there, but for the rifle, I actually phoned in the local police. And I guess they had better things to do that day, so I wound up having to take it in myself and hand it off like outside of their own parking lot.
Wow,
that's crazy.
Which is kind of a hassle, but it's a cool story. Unfortunately, I never did get it back. I forgot to request that if they didn't find any sort of serial number or
the owner or something,
any sort of case or record connected to it, that I would have liked to have it back. So I guess I'll probably never see that one again, but.
Well, interesting. I'm glad we had you on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors, because I think, you know, people are going to hear your story and go, you know what, I'm going to go online
and try that.
I'm going to get me a big old magnet too, with a winch.
It's pretty fun.
I would bring a winch.
Actually, yeah, it's a lot like real fishing, though. You know, except you know the bait will never move. It's either there or it's not. You know?
It's a good point. Yeah, Jared Coker, our guest today on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Now, besides catching things out of rivers, you also catch snakes. How did that get started?
Well, that was a long time ago. I'm 22 now. I started actually like trying to find snakes when I was 13. I think I'd been watching some of those like nature shows, you know, the type of show that says don't try this at home at the beginning, but of course I wanted to try it at home. So I don't know why it was snakes in general. Maybe it's because I just thought they'd be easier to catch in theory, not having legs and stuff. But I caught my first one when I was 13, kind of right outside my house. And mind you, I'm making it sound like I was kind of dumb about this, but I at least had the knowledge to study up like every species in my area and know which was which and whatnot. So I knew only to handle the non-venomous ones because if they bite you,
yeah,
you might bleed for a second, but that's about it.
But have you been bitten by a poisonous snake?
No, never by a venomous one. Okay. I have gone so far as to kind of like pick one up before. Obviously, you know, like I had a stick in one hand. I was keeping its head away from me, but I think that was a timber rattlesnake.
Nice.
Yeah, I know I've found copperheads before.
So all this on YouTube somewhere where people can see it?
Yeah, that's on my channel. It's just my name, Jared Coker. I've actually got a bunch of them floating around.
Nice.
The whole snake thing actually kind of led to my more popular channel, Jared Coker Urbex, though. That's where I explore abandoned stuff.
Oh, very cool. Oh, I just saw a story about the abandoned castle in Missouri. Maybe you can go find that. So are you monetized through YouTube? You got enough videos out there like Mr. Beast? You know that guy?
Obviously, I'd love to be, but unfortunately, I'm not big enough yet for that. The YouTube thing is, it's kind of difficult to get there because sure. You first need 1,000 subscribers, which I'm not quite there yet on any channel except for that Explorer channel I talked to. That's within 100 now.
Well,
you also need 4,000 hours of watch time over the previous year. And obviously that means you need a lot of videos, you need some like longer videos, and you need a lot of people watching them, you know?
Well, now that you're on Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors, you're on your way. I'll just have
we'll
to
get,
tell you.
We'll get you closer,
absolutely.
Brother.
I would hope so.
Yeah, you bet. You bet.
No, that's very cool. And again, the other credit that you have is you're also a bowler. It's mentioned in your bio that I have.
Yeah.
So, and bowling's big in St. Louis.
Yeah, but a 300 bowler. Is what he is.
Yeah.
That's like a hole in. Are you a golfer too?
No, I'm not a golfer. I went to a driving range once and it was very embarrassing. So I don't really see golfing in my future.
Stick to bowling if you just bowled a 300.
Oh,
that's fantastic. Good for you.
I will stick to bowling.
Are you a married man?
No, I'm only 22.
Well, hold on.
That'd be a very smart choice for me at this point anyway.
That's good thinking, but there are younger husbands out there. I just didn't know if you had to navigate all your explorations of urbex or magnet fishing or bowling around a wife making decisions with you. I didn't know if that was part of the problem.
No, none of that going on right now.
Okay, well.
Good luck.
Sounds like you're a little busy. Yeah, from three married guys. Good luck with that. Well, Jared, great talking to you. Mark, you have anything else?
No, we're good. Jared, fantastic, man. Now I want to go magnet fishing. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Just definitely. If you think it looks fun, if you got a little extra cash on your hands, I know a decent magnet you can get along with some rope and gloves for less than $100. So.
Oh, on my way. On my way. Good deal. Well, Jared Coker, good luck to you. Hopefully we'll see you in the news again about some other great find. Are you going to continue doing the magnet fishing since you had some good luck recently?
Oh, absolutely. I know I'm back home now, and I know where all the decent spots are at, so I'll definitely be giving some new ones some try also.
Great talking to you. Thanks for joining us on Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors where you can even do some magnet fishing. All right, coming up, we've got more for you here on the show. Travis Moore from the Missouri Department of Conservation and the lake sturgeon subject. If you're into fishing for them, stick around. It's coming up next.
For you are a magnet, and I am the sea. Somehow I made it through. I'm just an intern, I still make a mistake or two. I was last in my class, barely passed.
Like a surgeon, in case you were wondering, by Weird Al Yankovic.
I was going to say, that sounded like a Weird Al's kind of work there.
Any excuse to play
because
Weird Al.
Because it kind of rhymes with sturgeon.
Yeah.
Right? Which is where
every
we're going
time
in this
I
segment. Yeah.
Heard about this topic, like a surgeon. I kept singing in my head, like a sturgeon.
How did this guy make a living doing that? I just
Carl?
We have this, actually, Al and I have the same birthday. So I love that about us. But Weird he's Carl. The number one selling comedian of all time.
Okay, that's crazy. Hey, since this whole show is really, well, mostly devoted about outdoors fishing, magnet fishing, sturgeon fishing, I do need to mention, though, a segment, this segment, brought to you by Razorback Armor, your gun concierge, in De Pere on Manchester Road. They are right next to the tennis store, and I mention that because you'll see the word tennis first, but if you would like to go in and have their undivided attention, go to their website, RazorbackArmory.com. Make an appointment, almost like going to the doctor or going to the mechanic. Make an appointment. You can go in and get their undivided attention. Tell them Bo sent you to Razorback Armory.
And right now, we want to welcome in Travis Moore from the Missouri Department of Conservation. Travis, welcome into Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. How are you?
How's it going this morning?
Going great. Probably not as good as you because you've probably already been out on the lake this morning.
I actually have a busy day on two lakes today, so we'll be out this afternoon and this evening. I probably won't get home till about 2 o'clock in the morning, finishing up our second one. So
wow. So the reason we wanted to have you on today, primarily, you know, I was at the Lake of the Ozarks a couple weekends ago. I unfortunately didn't get to go fishing when I was down there, but this story came to our attention that sturgeon have shown up. Now in the Lake of the Ozarks, and they weren't stocked there, right, by the Missouri Department of Conservation. Tell us the story on this, because you guys have been trying to bring sturgeon back in the state anyway, right?
Right, yeah. So we've been working with lake sturgeon throughout the state of Missouri since the mid-1980s, and we first started stocking them into Mark Twain Lake, eventually started stocking them into our big rivers, and that population is doing really, really well. But the thing that's been really interesting over the course of the last, you know, 6 or 7 years or so, is that we've had lake sturgeon being caught and seen in Lake of the Ozarks. And we haven't stocked them there, but there are records of them being in the Osage River prior to the Bangle Dam being built. And then even after the dam was built, there were a few records of a few fish being seen by a conservation agent back, you know, decades ago. And then there's those occasional reports going through the 80s and early 90s, and then nothing. And then all of a sudden, like I said, over the course of the last several years, there's been several lake sturgeon caught, and they're starting to get to be pretty good size. So this most recent fish was somewhere between 50 and 60 pounds.
Wow.
Travis Moore from the Missouri Department of Conservation, our guest. Where are sturgeon more prominent in the U.S.? Like, where do people normally go to fish for them?
Sure. So most of the places here in the United States, most of the states have them protected because most of the states are still trying to bring those populations back. There are a couple of harvest seasons. Wisconsin has the biggest one. They have a wintertime spearing season that they do. It's usually around Valentine's Day on Lake Winnebago. It's a huge event, very popular, worth going just to see. Particularly whenever they start bringing some of those big fish in. And then they do have a set line season on the Wisconsin River, and then Minnesota has a little bit of a season as well. But even though those are the only places where you might be able to keep them, like in Missouri, it's still a catch-and-release fish. And so most of the folks who are catching them here in the Missouri, in the Mississippi River, the Osage River, some of those other streams, they're usually fishing for catfish. Using cut shad or night crawlers, and they're hooking into these lake sturgeon and having a whale of a time landing them because you know, it's a fish that can get to be over 200 pounds, and we've had a few that were probably over 100 that have been reported here in Missouri.
Wow.
Whoa.
And what a shock. So when people do catch them, the expectation is you have to release them, correct?
Correct, yeah. So whether you're fishing the Missouri or the Illinois side of the river, both states have them protected. You do have to release them. We always encourage folks, you know, if you want to take a quick picture, you know, that works great because that helps us to look them over, see if you see any tags or any special marks on them because we do have some of the fish that we've marked. And if you see something unusual, then, you know, note that as well and then give us a holler. And it's always possible, particularly if it's one that does have a tag that you can see, that we can look it up and tell you, you know, when we first tagged that fish, where they've been, and et cetera.
What a thrill. Have people described what it's like to fight one of these? I mean, is it a really good, like a really huge game fish? Or not.
Yeah. If it's 200 pounds, I'm thinking.
Well, yeah, but even a 50 or 60 pound fish, I mean, my goodness.
So, okay, so by comparison, I can tell you for a couple of the stories. I mean, one of the things I guess that's a little bit unique that the lake sturgeon will do a lot of times whenever you're rod and reeling them is it's not uncommon for them to leap out of the water. So you think about tarpon out in the ocean or, you know, some of those species. Oftentimes that's your first, and sometimes it's your only look at what you actually have on the other end of the line. But I can tell you, like in the case with Troy Staggs, who was the individual that caught this most recent one on Lake of the Ozarks, and that actually was his second lake sturgeon capture out there over the last few years.
Wow.
And he said he didn't actually hook the fish. He was snagging for paddlefish, and his line got wrapped around the tail of the lake sturgeon. And he said, you know, this one, with it only being 50 to 60 pounds, I think he told me that he had landed a 90-plus pound paddlefish before, and he said this fish fought way harder. He said it took him almost an hour to land it.
Wow.
So, you know, you get those. I have, you know, a local individual up here near Hannibal that they fish on the Osage River quite a bit, and they fish for catfish, and he made a comment. He said, you know, we're getting to the point where we're catching them so regularly that he said, we have to flip a coin to see who has to reel in this next one because I'm tired from reeling in the last one.
It's a workout.
It is. And he sent me a picture here from last year, and they had two fish on line at the same time. The smallest one was 45. The other one was 65.
Wow. So for people that are experienced in fishing for sturgeon, what do they use, like, in the northern states? I mean, because I've never fished for it, although I grew up in my younger years in Minnesota. What do people normally use to catch sturgeon? You said the people that are basically fishing for catfish are ending up with a sturgeon right on the end of the line.
Right, yeah. So it is one of those things. I mean, night crawlers are a universal bait. It's what we use a lot of times to try to catch them for when we're doing our studies.
Somehow I made it through. I'm just an intern. I still make a mistake or two. I was last in my class. Barely passed.
Like a surgeon, in case you were wondering, by Weird Al Yankovic.
I was going to say, that sounded like a Weird Al's kind of work there.
Any excuse to
because
play Weird Al.
Because it kind of rhymes with sturgeon.
Yeah.
Right? Which is
every time I heard about this topic, I kept singing in my head like a sturgeon.
How did this guy make a living doing that? I just
Carl.
We have this, actually Al and I have the same birthday, so I love that about us. But he's the number one selling comedian of all time.
Okay, that's crazy. Hey, since this whole show is really, well, mostly devoted about outdoors fishing, magnet fishing, sturgeon fishing, I do need to mention, though, this segment brought to you by Razorback Armor, your gun concierge, in De Pere on Manchester Road. They are right next to the tennis store, and I mention that because you'll see the word tennis first, but if you would like to go in and have their undivided attention, go to their website, RazorbackArmory.com. Make an appointment. Almost like going to the doctor or going to the mechanic. Make an appointment. You can go in and get their undivided attention. Tell them Bo sent you to Razorback Armory.
And right now we want to welcome in Travis Moore from the Missouri Department of Conservation. Travis, welcome into Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. How are you?
How's it going this morning?
Going great. Probably not as good as you because you've probably already been out on the lake this morning.
I have a busy day on two lakes today, so we'll be out this afternoon and this evening. I probably won't get home till about 2 o'clock in the morning, finishing up our second one. So
wow. So the reason we wanted to have you on today, primarily, you know, I was at the Lake of the Ozarks a couple weekends ago. I unfortunately didn't get to go fishing when I was down there, but this story came to our attention that sturgeon have shown up. Now in the Lake of the Ozarks, and they weren't stocked there, right, by the Missouri Department of Conservation. Tell us the story on this, because you guys have been trying to bring sturgeon back in the state anyway, right?
Right, yeah. So we've been working with lake sturgeon throughout the state of Missouri since the mid-1980s, and we first started stocking them into Mark Twain Lake, eventually started stocking them into our big rivers, and that population is doing really, really well. But the thing that's been really interesting over the course of the last, you know, 6 or 7 years or so is that we've had lake sturgeon being caught and seen in Lake of the Ozarks. And we haven't stocked them there, but there are records of them being in the Osage River prior to the Bagnell Dam being built. And then even after the dam was built, there were a few records of a few fish being seen by a conservation agent back, you know, decades ago. And then there's those occasional reports going through the 80s and early 90s, and then nothing. And then all of a sudden, like I said, over the course of the last several years, there's been several lake sturgeon caught, and they're starting to get to be pretty good size. So this most recent fish was somewhere between 50 and 60 pounds.
Wow.
Travis Moore from the Missouri Department of Conservation, our guest. Where are sturgeon more prominent in the U.S.? Like, where do people normally go to fish for them?
Sure. So most of the places here in the United States, most of the states have them protected because most of the states are still trying to bring those populations back. There are a couple of harvest seasons. Wisconsin has the biggest one. They have a wintertime spearing season that they do. It's usually around Valentine's Day on Lake Winnebago. It's a huge event, very popular, worth going just to see, particularly whenever they start bringing some of those big fish in. And then they do have a set line season on the Wisconsin River, and then Minnesota has a little bit of a season as well. But even though those are the only places where you might be able to keep them, like in Missouri, it's still a catch and release fish. And so most of the folks who are catching them here in the Missouri, in the Mississippi River, the Osage River, some of those other streams, they're usually fishing for catfish, using cut shad or night crawlers, and they're hooking into these lake sturgeon and having a whale of a time landing them because you know, it's a fish that can get to be over 200 pounds, and we've had a few that were probably over 100 that have been reported here in Missouri.
Wow.
Whoa.
And what a shock. So when people do catch them, the expectation is you have to release them, correct?
Correct, yeah. So whether you're fishing the Missouri or the Illinois side of the river, both states have them protected. You do have to release them. We always encourage folks, you know, if you want to take a quick picture, you know, that works great because that helps us to look them over, see if you see any tags or any special marks on them, because we do have some of the fish that we've marked. And if you see something unusual, then, you know, note that as well and then give us a holler. And it's always possible, particularly if it's one that does have a tag that you can see, that we can look it up and tell you, you know, when we first tagged that fish, where they've been, and et cetera.
What a thrill. Have people described what it's like to fight one of these? I mean, is it a really good, like a really huge game fish or not?
If it's 200 pounds, I'm thinking.
Well, yeah, but even a 50 or 60 pound fish, I mean, my goodness.
So, okay, so by comparison, I can tell you for a couple of the stories. I mean, one of the things I guess that's a little bit unique that the lake sturgeon will do a lot of times whenever you're rod and reeling them is it's not uncommon for them to leap out of the water. So you think about tarpon out in the ocean or, you know, some of those species. Oftentimes that's your first, and sometimes it's your only look at what you actually have on the other end of the line. But I can tell you, like in the case with Troy Staggs, who was the individual that caught this most recent one on Lake of the Ozarks, and that actually was his second lake sturgeon capture out there over the last few years.
Wow.
And he said he didn't actually hook the fish. He was snagging for paddlefish, and his line got wrapped around the tail of the lake sturgeon. And he said, you know, this one, with it only being 50 to 60 pounds, I think he told me that he had landed a 90-plus pound paddlefish before, and he said this fish fought way harder. He said it took him almost an hour to land it.
Wow.
So, you know, you get those. I have, you know, a local individual up here near Hannibal that they fish on the Osage River quite a bit, and they fish for catfish, and he made a comment. He said, you know, we're getting to the point where we're catching them so regularly that he said, we have to flip a coin to see who has to reel in this next one because I'm tired from reeling in the last one.
It's a workout.
It is. And he sent me a picture here from last year, and they had two fish on line at the same time. The smallest one was 45. The other one was 65.
Wow. So for people that are experienced in fishing for sturgeon, what do they use, like, in the northern states? I mean, because I've never fished for it, although I grew up in my younger years in Minnesota. What do people normally use to catch sturgeon? You said the people that are basically fishing for catfish are ending up with a sturgeon on the end of the line.
Right, yeah. So it is one of those things. I mean, night crawlers are a universal bait. It's what we use a lot of times to try to catch them for when we're doing our studies. And then in the wintertime, they pick on dead and dying shad. And so a lot of the folks that have told me that, you know, when they're fishing for catfish and they catch a lake sturgeon, they're using, you know, shad fillets or cut shad. And it's kind of a delicacy for those lake sturgeon. You know, I think the thing that's kind of interesting is they feed primarily on insects and small fish and crayfish, things like that. They don't have any teeth. They've got this suction-type mouth. But, you know, an old slimy gizzard shad slides down really well, I guess, and they get a lot of nutrients from it. So that's what a lot of them are using. But that wintertime fishing that they do on Lake Winnebago, it's a wintertime spearfishing season. And basically, they put their shanties out on the ice and cut big holes in it, and then they have a big gig that they use. And so you're sitting looking over a hole for several hours and hoping that a fish comes by your way that you can try to stick.
Well, if you're drinking on that fishing trip, you better be careful. You're going to be waiting around a long time.
And that's it. You know, they put out what they call a lure. It's usually it's a hand-carved something that they put down there to try to draw the attention of the fish. And so it's curious. They'll move it from time to time. Fish comes up and looks at it. And I will say, you know, I've been up there a couple of times. It is interesting that almost all of their check stations are outside of an adult beverage establishment. So,
ironic.
It's Wisconsin, it's fishing, it's wintertime. You're going to have some beverages consumed in there as well.
Are you stereotyping?
I have some friends up that direction. I know exactly what they're like.
You're just observing.
Yeah, that's true. Travis Moore, our guest from the Missouri Department of Conservation. Let's switch gears and talk about fish that a lot of fishermen are probably a little more familiar with, and those are crappie. And you guys have been having a banner year up at Mark Twain, right?
Yep. This is going to be a good couple of years. Mark Twain has a couple of swings. It does happen from time to time, and we're in a good swing right now. So we do our fall trap net sampling on the lake. We did our sampling back this last October, and we keep records of, you know, how many fish that we catch that are over 9 inches and et cetera. And our average fish per net prior to last year, the record was about 14 of those 9 inchers per net. This last fall, it was almost 20.
Wow.
And so there are right now, I mean, as of last week, there are folks that are out there fishing and they're catching their 15 fish a lot of times in 20 minutes or less. They're in the shallows right now. There's lots of those 10-inch fish out there. And so it's good fishing right now. That'll continue through this year. And then, you know, you'll get a lot of those fish are going to survive through this year as well. And they're going to be those 12, 13, 14-inch fish next year. This year and next year are just going to be phenomenal for crappie at Mark Twain.
It's the pros. Missouri Department of Conservation, Travis Moore. What do you attribute that to? I mean, I know we want to say it's all pandemic related, but I mean, is it because there was less fishermen out? No, seriously, were there less people fishing in the last couple of years? Do you think that's why there's a big bump? Or is it just a natural cycle where you get the 9 and 10 inchers?
Yeah, so Mark Twain there's two things that play into that lake, and one is that it really does live and die by its shad population, and then the part that plays into that shad population is what kind of a water year we have. And if we wind up with a lot of extra rain, it washes a lot of nutrients into the lake, and what ends up happening is those shad, whenever they hatch, they're able to find plenty of food and they grow too fast. And when they grow too fast, they get to be too big for the crappie to eat. And so those are those years when we don't have the greatest crappie fishing up there. But when we get those right set of conditions, the shad hatch, we get big hatches, but those little ones just don't grow very much. Then they stay in that prime range for our crappie, and they just load up. I mean, they just feed like crazy on those little ones. And so that's why we get these banner years.
Good to hear. Travis, I have to ask, you mentioned at the beginning of the interview, you'll be out to 2 in the morning. What are you doing out that late?
Sure. So part of my work area is the very far northeast corner of Missouri, and there's one of the lakes that we sample up there that is super clear. I mean, it's we can see over 10 feet down in this one. And so if we went out in the daytime, we're going to be electrofishing. So we shock, you know, the fish that are in that lake, and then we'll measure them and get a little information on them. And when it's really clear like that, the fish obviously see you coming. And so they'll run from us. They'll be in deeper water, and you just can't do anything with them because our electricity just doesn't go that deep. So we go at nighttime, and they'll move up into the shallows. They can't see us coming. And so we won't actually start that lake this evening until about sunset. And then we'll do half-hour runs, measure our fish, do another half-hour run. And so we'll be out there for a couple hours as we're doing that sampling.
Nice. So when is electric fishing season?
Yeah. Good luck with that one.
You know, I just wondered. It sounds easy.
Yeah, there actually are some states that allow it, but it's not Missouri, and last I knew, it's not Illinois. But one of my favorite jokes is a lot of folks do talk about the old telephone cranks, and you know, the guy sitting out on the pond, and the agent hollers out at him and says, "What are you doing?" And the guy hollers back, says, "I'm calling home. I think you need more money."
Hold on. How about the fishing with explosives joke? You remember that one?
Yeah, remember that one too.
You're gonna
hands him the lit dynamite, and you say you're gonna talk, you're gonna fish.
Yeah, exactly. Good fishing jokes. Hey, before we let you go, there's some new catfish regulations out there. So for those that are gonna go catfishing and may end up with a sturgeon, tell us before you go what those changes are.
Yeah, so this regulation is specific to Mark Twain. We bumped it up to a 26 minimum length for flathead and blue catfish on the lake. And a lot of that was based off of what we were seeing as far as the growth rates, what our surveys with our anglers and our public meetings, what they were saying that they wanted. And basically we're just trying to maximize the size of the fish that folks can catch, the amount of fillets that they may be wanting to take home. And so it's just one of those things that if you're on Mark Twain fishing this year, that catfish regulation has changed. It's still the same for the channel catfish hasn't changed for them, but specifically for blues and flatheads, it's got to be a 26-inch fish or bigger.
Wow. Got it.
You know your stuff. And we talked about the migration of sturgeon getting to the Lake of the Ozarks. Has the Japanese flying fish, have they made it down there as well? The flying carp, I think they're called?
Yeah, so big head and silver carp. Silvers are the ones that do most of the jumping. If you are below Bagnell Dam, yes, you're going to find them.
Wow.
They are going to be there. I mean, pretty much any of our river systems, there's always that possibility that you could find them in there. And definitely, you know, anything that's connected to the Mississippi or the Missouri, they're there. There's some places that we go to shock fish on, say, the Mississippi, and you turn on electricity and the water just explodes. And so some of those places we can't sample because there's just too many of them in there.
Oh, you get clobbered. Absolutely. Okay, well, thanks for answering that. I know we didn't plan to talk about it, but I was curious.
Yeah, Travis Moore, thank you, man. Have fun out on the water.
Yep, will do. Looks like it's going to be a beautiful day.
Sure does. All right, thank you. Travis Moore, the Missouri Department of Conservation. Just a wealth of information there.
You know, people are so passionate about stuff, and I love because you can throw anything at them.
Yeah.
Even your comment about electric fishing. You know, there are some states.
At all.
There are some states that allow that. Maybe that's your next vacation there, Mark.
That or dynamite fishing, one of the two. It all makes it a little easier, right? No, I'm just kidding. Hey, that's going to do it for this edition of Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors.
Absolutely. Great hanging with you, boys. And thank you for listening. Share this show by podcast through the Odyssey app, and we will see you next week.
Pew, pew.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.